Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of a special expanded edition of Way Too Early as we remember Queen Elizabeth. I'm Jonathan Lemire on this Friday, September 9th. Thanks for starting your day with us. The world is indeed in mourning today following the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Buckingham Palace announced the passing of England's longest reigning monarch at 96 years old yesterday, writing in a brief statement that the Queen died peacefully at Balmoral this afternoon. That's her summer home in Scotland. What comes next is a meticulously planned national memorializing of the Queen, which was reportedly set in motion with four coded words yesterday. London Bridge is down. As part of the plans, England's new king, Charles III, will deliver a televised address to the United Kingdom tonight. Tomorrow, after privately taking an oath swearing to protect the Church of Scotland, King Charles' accession is expected to be announced from a balcony at St. James Palace. That very oath has been taken by every monarch since George I in the year 1714. Meanwhile, the Queen's body will be transported back to Buckingham Palace for a small funeral reception attended by top government officials. That group will include the United Kingdom's new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, who was sworn in just this week in the Queen's final act of public duty. The Queen's body is expected to stay there until Tuesday before being moved again to Westminster Palace, where members of the public will be able to pay their respects. Simultaneously, the new king will tour the UK before returning to London for Queen Elizabeth's, his mother's, funeral. Following that funeral, the Queen will be buried inside St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. Joining us now, London-based breaking news reporter for The Washington Post, Jennifer Hassan. Jennifer, thanks so much for being with us. The Queen has reigned for so long, 70 years. The very thought of another ruler is shocking. But the monarchy goes on. King Charles III, tell us a little bit about him and what we may expect to hear from him when he addresses the United Kingdom tonight.
Hi, good morning. Yes, as you mentioned, London Bridge is down and we do have a new king, King Charles III. It's been really strange, actually, overnight and this morning, catching up on the news myself over breakfast, and quite a few news reporters are stumbling over the words King Charles III. And I think that just sort of highlights how strange this feels for anyone in Britain to say those words. You know, our national anthem has changed to God Save the King. Everything just feels extremely strange right now, very uncertain. And I think a lot of people, millions in fact, will be watching and waiting to see what he will say later on today and what kind of reign he is going to have.
You yesterday for the Washington Post highlighted the Queen's relationship with 13 presidential administrations. It's extraordinary just how much of history she witnessed. Tell us a few things that stood out to you as you went through the decades and the relationship between the palace and the White House.
Yeah, I think it's just this duty of service that she has had. You know, as you mentioned, she's met with so many presidents. She's met with 15 prime ministers here in Britain. And throughout it all, no matter her own personal opinion on that leader, she's never really let it show. You know, she famously met with Donald Trump when he was here in the United Kingdom a couple of years ago. And there was a lot of backlash when Trump was here. And she met with him. She went for a walk around the palace grounds. Windsor Castle grounds with him. You know, she has always remained neutral no matter what. And I think the fact that she's met so many world leaders and they all hold her in such high regard really is testament to the kind of woman that she was.
Yeah, she certainly did keep her poker face when she met Trump again a year or so later, the 75th commemoration of D-Day. The Washington Post, Jennifer Hassan, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We greatly appreciate it. Immediately upon the Queen's death, Charles became the next King of England. Going by the name of King Charles III, he paid his own tribute to the Queen with a statement that read this way. We mourn profoundly the passing of a cherished sovereign and a much-loved mother. I know her loss will be deeply felt throughout the country, the realms, and the Commonwealth, and by countless people around the world. King Charles III and his queen consort, Camilla, will return to London today to begin the process of accession to the throne. He'll then begin a tour of the United Kingdom. Joining us now, fellow at the Royal Historical Society and emeritus professor at the University of Roehampton, Susanna Lipscomb. She is also the host of the Not Just the Tudors podcast. Susanna, you are an expert on the monarchy. So talk to us a little bit, if you will, about Queen Elizabeth's legacy. We know about its duration, but what else? What else will we all remember about her?
I think that one of the key things we need to remember about the Queen is that she worked out a blueprint for how to be a constitutional monarch. Before her, monarchs had much more power than she ever held. She had to work that out during a period of Britain's declining geopolitical power, no matter what our Prime Minister said yesterday, and during a period of decolonization, during a period with massive societal changes, and many of them to our good, of course. And she has presided over that, and she has created a role for the monarch as a head of the Commonwealth, as a diplomat of the sort of soft power you were talking about earlier, that ability to change outcomes without coercion, but through attraction. And she has given an example that we will expect future monarchs to match. But it's a pretty high bar. And so in some ways, the legacy is going to be a question of whether in the future, King Charles and the other kings that will follow can do what she has done so successfully over the last 70 years.
And that's exactly where I wanted to go with you next. The future of the monarchy, you know, King Charles III is now on the throne, but he's not a young man. What do we expect his reign could look like? And then in the generations to follow, what could this new monarchy be?
Yes, he was the longest serving heir apparent in British history. He's the oldest monarch, new monarch in British history. And absolutely, he's taking on a job where most people have long retired. It is impossible to imagine that he'll still be king in, well, it's possible, but it's unlikely he'll still be king in 30 years' time. So in some ways, actually, what we're looking at is not just looking forward to one king, but we're looking forward to many of us in our lifetimes are going to experience three, possibly even four sovereigns on the throne. In terms of his character, I think that he is much more thoughtful and cultured and pragmatic than many people have said. I think that he has been rightly described by Boris Johnson as prophet without honour. He was someone who was speaking about climate change and sustainable agriculture and deforestation long before anyone else, except perhaps his father. And whilst it isn't in his role now as king to say public statements about these things, discretion is the better part of valor here. Actually, I think that privately he might exercise some of that soft power.
Susanna, briefly, we know here in the United States there's always been much fascination with the princes, William and Henry. Tell us about them and what their role could be like in the years ahead.
Well, Prince William will become the Prince of Wales, and his wife Catherine will become the Princess of Wales. And that will happen in a ceremony at Carnarvon Castle in due time. But at some point he will be named Prince of Wales because that is the name that is always given to the heir. So his family and his son, particularly his eldest son, have moved up the ranks, I suppose, in terms of the line of succession. And so I think the focus will increasingly be on them. At the same time, because he has sons, the focus will shift in terms of that hereditary right away from Prince Harry. And my understanding of Prince Charles, King Charles's, you see how difficult it is to change, King mm-hmm. Charles's ambitions is very much to streamline the monarchy. So I think that we may see less of those members of the royal family who are outside that direct line of succession, except insofar as they put themselves forward for public attention.
All right. We appreciate the insight so very much from an expert on these matters. And you can hear more from Susanna's on her podcast, which is called Not Just the Tudors. She's a fellow at the Royal Historical Society. Susanna Lipscomb, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. President Joe Biden and First Lady Jill Biden visited the British Embassy in Washington last night. They signed a book of condolences and the president wrote a message of sympathy. Later, he attended a DNC fundraiser and had this to say about the Queen.
I had the opportunity to meet her before she passed, and she was an incredibly gracious and decent woman. And the thoughts and prayers of the American people are with the people of the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth in their grief.
We expect to hear more from the president about the Queen in the days ahead. He added that the Queen was a source of comfort and pride for generations of Britons. Former President Donald Trump released a statement as well, saying the Queen's historic and remarkable reign left a tremendous legacy of peace and prosperity for Great Britain. His predecessor, Barack Obama, said the Queen made the role her own, adding, with a reign defined by grace, elegance, and a tireless work ethic, defying the odds and expectations placed on women of her generation. Former President George W. Bush put out a statement, Queen Elizabeth ably led England through dark moments with her confidence in her people and her vision for a brighter tomorrow. Former President Bill Clinton added, in sunshine or storm, she was a source of stability, serenity, and strength. And from former President Jimmy Carter, the Queen's dignity, graciousness, and sense of duty have been an inspiration, and we join the millions around the world in mourning a remarkable leader. Just a testament to just how many presidents this Queen met. And up next, a closer look at how the Queen helped to form America's special relationship with Great Britain. Our live continuing special coverage continues in just a moment.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Throughout Queen Elizabeth's 70-year reign, Americans for generations have been fascinated with every move the Queen made, transfixed by her commitment to having a good relationship with the United States. Here's NBC's Lester Holt with more.
We've seen presidents come and go, but for 70 years, she was always right there. Queen Elizabeth, across the pond, but close to so many American hearts.
The Queen has just left Buckingham Palace.
It was love at first sight, her coronation watched by millions coast to coast.
We are delighted to be here in Washington.
On her first visit at Queens, she reveled in an all-American welcome, a state dinner hosted by President Eisenhower, and a ticker tape parade in New York. Regal, yet relatable, the young monarch leaving an enduring impression. Since then, America's royal obsession only growing as Queen Elizabeth charmed us, including celebrating America's pastime.
Oh, it was great. Can we see her? Because, I mean, she came all the way from England.
It's wonderful. Meet the great lady of the world.
And watching horse racing.
My heart is still pounding.
Oh, I was just overwhelmed. I got chills.
Our fascination extending to her children and grandchildren through all the highs and the lows. On America's 200th birthday, she spoke about the special ties between the U.S. and U.K.
Your Declaration of Independence broke that link, but it did not for long break our friendship.
and then a dance with President Ford. She met 13 presidents in all.
I'm confident that our common values and shared interests will continue to unite us,
helping draw in more American visitors than any other country. After 9/11, she famously had the Royal Guards play the Star Spangled Banner in front of Buckingham Palace to show our tight bond remained unbroken. America remembering England's Queen and celebrating her incredible legacy.
Our thanks to NBC's Lester Holt. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, we'll look at some of the other stories making headlines this morning, including Secretary of State Antony Blinken's surprise trip to Ukraine. Way Too Early, we'll be right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken made an unannounced trip to Ukraine yesterday. Blinken met with President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv and pledged an additional $2 billion in long-term military aid for Ukraine and 18 other European countries threatened by Russia. Blinken's announcement coincided with the rest of the Biden administration unveiling a roughly $600 million package of heavy weaponry and ammunition, which includes howitzers, Humvees, and anti-tank systems. Blinken also commended Kyiv for the counteroffensive that's begun in the south, saying the effort to regain control of Russian-held areas was, quote, proving effective. This is the Secretary of State's second trip to Ukraine since the war started back in February. Elsewhere, police in Uvalde, Texas, say that two people were wounded during a shooting yesterday at a park just a short distance from Robb Elementary School, which, of course, was the site of that massacre a few months ago. The two juvenile victims from yesterday are being treated in nearby San Antonio. Texas Department of Public Safety officials say the shooting is believed to be gang-related. Governor Greg Abbott said last night that he was dispatching six additional state trooper units to Uvalde to coordinate anti-gang efforts with local authorities. Legendary broadcast journalist Bernard Shaw has died of pneumonia, his family confirmed yesterday. Shaw was CNN's first chief anchor when the channel launched back in June of 1980. He held that position for 20 years and covered some of the biggest moments in recent history, including Tiananmen Square and the death of Princess Diana. He was known for his tough questions, a skill he showed as he moderated the second 1988 presidential election debate. Some political pundits believe that this question to Democratic nominee Michael Dukakis doomed the campaign of the Massachusetts governor.
Governor, if Kitty Dukakis were raped and murdered, would you favor an irrevocable death penalty for the killer?
No, I don't, Bernard, and I think you know that I've opposed the death penalty during all of my life. I don't see any evidence that it's a deterrent, and I think there are better and more effective ways to deal with violent crime.
A famous question indeed. Shaw was inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame in 1999 and was dubbed a member of the Boys of Baghdad, who were a famous group of journalists who reported on the start of the Persian Gulf War from a hotel room in Iraq. He announced his retirement from CNN just days after the 2000 presidential campaign. He is survived by his wife, Linda, and their children. Bernard Shaw was 82 years old. Time now for the weather, and let's go to meteorologist Michelle Grossman for the weekend forecast. Michelle, how's it looking?
Well, finally the weekend, so we're already looking good. Unfortunately, though, we do have one more day of some really dangerous heat, but it's one more day. And we're looking at temperatures into the triple digits once again. 28 million people impacted, mainly in Central and Southern California, with temperatures soaring once again well above normal for this time of year, well into the 100s. So Redding today, 110, that's 16 degrees above average for this time of year. Fresno, 105. Bakersfield, 105. Los Angeles, 98 degrees. Big difference tomorrow. We're going to be into the 80s in Los Angeles. Unfortunately, we're replacing that concern with the concern for some flash flooding. So this is moisture that's going to be streaming in from Tropical Storm K, not making a landfall here. It's going to be off to the west, but still bringing some heavy rain. Locally amounts 3 to 6 inches. We could see some mudslides in the higher elevations of the mountains. And we're looking at some rain also in the southeast. This has been so wet over the past couple of weeks. We're going to see rounds of scattered showers and storms once again in the southeast. You can see those brighter colors, the reds, the oranges, the yellows. That's where we expect the heaviest rain. And again, we could see pockets of localized flooding. That's from the eastern Gulf Coast into the panhandle of Florida, up through Georgia and the Carolinas. We're going to see that not only today, but tomorrow and also on Sunday. So as we go ahead and look towards your weekend forecast, let's start out with the good news because we're looking gorgeous in the Northeast. A really pretty day today. Nice day tomorrow. It's the Southeast where we're watching that flood risk once again. The middle of the country, more wet weather from the Great Lakes into the Central Plains. Could see some storms as well. We're dry in the Pacific Northwest, but we start to heat up. So as we cool down in the South, we're going to push that heat up into the North. And that's because that high pressure is sort of receding in the Southwest. More tropical rain, more threats for flash flooding into the Southwest from what will be Tropical Storm K. And at that point, what's left over of Tropical Storm K, because we're going to see that the remnants of it at that point. By Sunday, we're looking at sunny and nice in the Northern Plains into the Central Plains. Nice temperatures into the 70s. They were hot for so long. We're looking at really nice temperatures. Lingering showers into the Southwest. Sunshine in the Southern Plains. And then look what happens out east. We sort of see that rain expanding. So the Great Lakes, the Ohio Valley, the Tennessee Valley, into portions of the Southeast, we are looking at showers and storms. New England, though, looking good as we're looking at some sunshine with temperatures into the 80s and 70s.
Michelle Grossman, thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Still ahead here on our special edition of Way Too Early, we'll continue to follow developments from London as the world mourns the death of Queen Elizabeth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our special edition of Way Too Early. It's just before 5:30 a.m. on the East Coast, 2:30 on the West Coast, and 10:30 a.m. in London. I'm Jonathan Lemire. Thanks for being with us today. The UK's new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, paid tribute to Queen Elizabeth for her extraordinary achievement as Britain's longest reigning monarch. Queen Elizabeth had appointed Truss as Prime Minister just 48 hours before Her Majesty's death. Truss delivered her remarks outside 10 Downing Street and was the first to use the phrase, "God save the King."
We are all devastated by the news that we have just heard from Balmoral. The death of Her Majesty the Queen is a huge shock to the nation and to the world. Queen Elizabeth II was the rock on which modern Britain was built. Our country has grown and flourished under her reign. Britain is the great country it is today because of her. Today, the crown passes, as it has done for more than 1,000 years, to our new monarch, our new head of state, His Majesty, King Charles III. With the King's family, we mourn the loss of his mother, and as we mourn, we must come together as a people to support him, to help him bear the awesome responsibility that he now carries for us all. And with the passing of the second Elizabethan age, we usher in a new era in the magnificent history of our great country, exactly as Her Majesty would have wished, by saying the words, "God save the King."
Joining us now, U.S. Special Correspondent for BBC News, our friend Caddy Kay. Caddy, we're so glad you're here with us this morning, and a fitting end, if you will, to the Queen's reign, that just before her death, still doing her duty, her commitment to service by bringing in the new prime minister. Talk to us a little bit about how you think she'll be remembered as, you know, Great Britain's for the first time in seven decades wake up without a queen.
I thought, like you, Jonathan, that that photograph of her frail with a walking stick, but still doing her job, and not just doing her job, smiling and doing her job, was exactly the right way for Britons to see their queen for the last time. She will be remembered as somebody who never complained, never shirked her responsibility, fulfilled her duty, and barely in the course of 70 years put a foot wrong. And that's why she is so beloved in Great Britain. She came into this role as queen not having been born for it. And yet when she pledged at the age of 21 that her life, long or short, and my goodness, was it long, would be to the service of her country, she did exactly that. She earned the trust of her subjects, and then she kept the trust of her subjects over the course of 70 years. And she did it by personifying that sense of duty and stoicism. And I think that's above all what she will be remembered for.
We were just speaking a few days ago when the new prime minister took over, just the short amount of challenges that Great Britain faces right now, cost of living crisis. Among them, those same challenges, of course, now face the new monarch, King Charles III. Tell us what we should know about him, who's been sort of in the, who's obviously been in the public eye for decades. What do we expect from his reign?
So this is a man who spent 73 years of his life knowing he was going to be king and waiting an awful long time in the wings for that job. He is somebody who has prepared for this. He knows what it's going to be like to make that transition from Prince of Wales, heir apparent, heir to the throne, to the king. And there are going to have to be changes that he makes. He is somebody who is known for being outspoken on a host of issues, climate change being the most notable. And I was just listening to John Kerry speaking on the BBC back in the UK this morning on the radio, saying he hopes that King Charles III will carry on embracing those issues and embracing the issue of climate change in particular, that he's held so dear. But it's not an easy path, because the British monarch is not engaged in policy, is not there to make laws, and they're not really meant to have an opinion about anything that could be controversial. In fact, they're not really meant to have an opinion about anything, and Prince Charles has lots of opinions. That's the disadvantage of becoming king at 76 as opposed to becoming queen at the age of 25. At 76, you have all of these statements that you've made, all of these things that you've said in public. People know what you think and believe. He's not a blank slate. She was a blank slate, and she could become monarch and be neutral in the way that the position demanded. I think it's going to be an interesting process to watch him, who has these opinions about big issues. And many people, like John Kerry was saying this morning, is hoping that he would carry on championing those issues. But how do you do that in the confines of strict neutrality when the issue itself has become so political and in times controversial? I think it's going to be very interesting to watch. The only thing one can assume is that after 73 years of his life, he has thought about these things very hard. He said in public, not always so diplomatically, listen, I'm not stupid. I know that I'm going to become king, and that is different from being prince.
Yeah, absolutely right. And watching his evolution will be fascinating in the years ahead. The BBC's Katty Kay, thank you. And we'll speak to you again on Morning Joe just a little bit later. Still ahead here on Way Too Early, we'll go live to CNBC for an early look at what's driving the day on Wall Street. We'll be right back. Time now for business. And for that, let's bring in CNBC's Arabile Gomede, who joins us live from what is today the center of the world in London. Good morning, sir. But let's stick to the business news here. Stock futures are up this morning as traders digest remarks from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so some positivity certainly filtering through into the market, kind of following on as well from a little bit of yesterday, right? We saw some gains in the market coming through yesterday, so the futures taking on that positivity. Indeed, as you noted, Fed Chair Jerome Powell coming out with comments saying that he will look to fight inflation quote, until the job is done. So that's certainly going to be a key message, meaning that higher interest rates are going to be here to stay. The kind of sentiment is that they don't want consumers to get used to these higher prices and think that it's the norm. So they're looking to try and fight that as much as possible. So markets going on the up, expecting interest rates to go higher, but inflation to be fought. So markets getting a sense of positivity. That's kind of filtered through to the Asian market, which also went higher today with the likes of the Hang Seng going up around 2%. Even in Europe, markets faring quite better as well today, seeing another day of positivity.
You mentioned inflation. The European Central Bank raised interest rates by a historic 75 basis points in an effort to tackle record inflation. And that's prompted some growing concern that surging energy prices could push the eurozone into a recession. Give us your sense of it.
Yeah, so it seems that from many analysts, however, that a recession is almost a foregone conclusion. The question is around how long that may go on for. And then that means interest rate hikes will certainly continue for quite some time, especially this year, to try and mitigate the high inflation. There are estimates for inflation to hit double digits, but now that is going down ever so slightly, with the ECB itself also dropping their estimate for inflation around 8% or so, and reckoning that things could get a little bit better from here if they continue on a slightly more aggressive path when it comes to interest rates. So indeed, 75 basis point hike for interest rates. That move by Christine Lagarde, certainly a record. We're done away with negative interest rates. And no more zero rates either. The question just becomes, all the loans that have been organized prior to this, what does that mean for them? Will they be able to refinance those and find more favorable rates? It certainly will get interesting.
And then lastly, Twitter has agreed to pay roughly $7 million to the whistleblower whose allegations will be part of Elon Musk's case against the company in his ongoing dispute about whether he's going to purchase it or not. Tell us a bit more about that settlement, please.
Yeah, that story just gets worse and worse, I suppose, for Twitter. It is now confirmed, of course, according to the Wall Street Journal, $7 million is that settlement price then for Peter Zatko, who had indeed put through that information to say that Twitter didn't actually have the kind of security measures that they needed to put in place in order to not get into some security issues. So their security plan not necessarily in place. They've made misleading statements about their defenses on hackers and spam accounts as well. He says he will meet the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee on September the 13th, however, to discuss more of these allegations. But Twitter indeed saying that in the, we will then pay him out. And $7 million in that June settlement is how much they've decided to put forward. So this may indeed bolster Elon Musk's case, but we'll certainly see how that fares a little bit later on.
Yeah, we're certainly watching that in the weeks ahead. CNBC's Arabella Gumede live from London. Thank you. Have a good weekend. Still ahead here, the Justice Department appeals the decision to grant the special master in the investigation into Donald Trump's handling of classified documents. Plus, Steve Bannon is indicted in New York City. Joyce Vance will join us to break down these latest legal developments next on Way to World. We'll have more on the death of Queen Elizabeth, but on this side of the Atlantic, we're following new developments after the FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Florida home and club. The DOJ has decided to appeal part of a federal judge's ruling to appoint a special master to review the documents taken from Mar-a-Lago. Prosecutors say they have serious concerns about handing government secrets over to a third party. The Department of Justice argues that the records seized from the Palm Beach estate last month are not the former president's personal records, and therefore he has no right to possess them. The DOJ also asked Judge Eileen Cannon, a Trump appointee, to put on hold her order, which blocks the department from using the seized records in its criminal investigation while it contests her ruling to a federal court of appeals. Law enforcement officials said in a filing yesterday that they would suffer irreparable harm if Judge Cannon's order remained in place. The judge directed Trump's lawyers to respond to the government's filing by Monday. In other legal news in Trump world, Steve Bannon pleaded not guilty yesterday in a New York court to charges of money laundering, scheming to defraud, and conspiracy. Those charges related to his involvement with an organization known as We Build the Wall, a group created and advertised as a fundraising effort to complete the wall at the southern border. It's charged that Bannon defrauded donors and illegally funneled more than $100,000 to the organization's president, and he profited himself. Bannon, if convicted, faces 5 to 15 years for the most serious charge. In 2020, Bannon was charged federally for his activities with We Build the Wall, but was then pardoned by President Trump before that case went to trial. Bannon was convicted in July of 2 counts of contempt of Congress after refusing to comply with a subpoena from the Congressional Committee, which is investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And we should note, presidential pardons do not apply to state charges. Joining us now, MSNBC legal analyst Joyce Vance. She's also a professor at the School of Law at the University of Alabama. Joyce, thanks so much for being with us. Let's start with that DOJ appeal. Tell us about it, how strong you feel it is or targeted you feel it is, and how do you see the case playing out now?
So this is a great strategy that DOJ is using. They've taken the strongest part of their case and asked the judge to create a carve out, in essence, asking her to permit them to go ahead and use about 100 documents that are classified materials while the rest of the case is ongoing. And to get the judge to enter an order like this, DOJ has to show that it has a strong chance of success on the merits and also that it will suffer irreparable injury if the judge continues to prohibit it from using the documents. Their case is very tightly crafted in this regard. They talk on the one hand about the former president's complete lack of any ownership interest or possessory right to these documents. In other words, Trump has no chance of success here in arguing that the documents should come back to him because they are not his. They are the government's. And at the same time, DOJ makes a forceful case for how it's in the intelligence community assessment will be damaged, as well as the criminal case in moving forward. So they're asking the judge to back off a little bit while they appeal the rest of their case to Atlanta. Look, Jonathan, I've stopped crystal balling these things at this point because the district judge's order was so outside the realm of possibility, given the law and the facts. But DOJ will go into the 11th Circuit with a very strong case, and one would expect that a good part of Judge Cannon's order gets reversed on appeal here.
There had been some discussion in previous days that a worry, if DOJ were to appeal, would be that it would delay the proceedings further. How much of a concern is that to you?
That's a significant delay. For one thing, just the procedural elements in an appeal involve delay. The parties have to create what's called the record from the lower court, putting together all of the evidence that the court had and that the appellate court should consider. That'll be a little bit easier here than it would be if it was a trial. It still takes some time. And then the typical briefing schedule extends out for a couple of months. DOJ can ask the court to expedite that briefing schedule, but there's still time involved if the case goes to oral argument before the court and for the judges to render their decision. And then on top of that, the prospect of a final appeal to the Supreme Court. So we could be looking at a lengthy delay here. But the 11th Circuit also has the ability to expedite and act very quickly if they choose to.
Yeah, the delay seems to all but guarantee that further legal steps would not happen until after the midterm elections, which had been the prevailing sense anyway. The DOJ would not want to take a what could be perceived as an overt political act so soon to the midterms, even though Donald Trump's name not technically on the ballot. We know he is the dominant figure in the Republican Party. She's the absolute best. MSNBC legal analyst Joyce Vance, thank you so much for getting up early with us this morning. Coming up on Morning Joe, we'll still have live coverage of the United Kingdom as we continue to remember Queen Elizabeth II. Plus, we'll hear from the U.S. Ambassador to the U.K., Jane Hartley, as well as her counterpart from the British Embassy, Ambassador Karen Pierce. Also ahead, was less than 2 months until the midterms, the head of the Democrats' campaign arm in the Senate, Senator Gary Peters, will join the conversation. Morning Joe, just a few moments away, way too early. We'll be right back.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.